Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
This is our breakdown. This is our update for you on where things are at in the trial of Lindsay Clancy. Let's get caught up and take your questions, your thoughts in the comments section. As we go through this, we will continue our conversation there because there's a lot to talk about. There's so many elements of this case at play right now. This video, we're going to be tackling basically what happened on Friday the 7th. It was a big day in the trial of Lindsay Clancy. The last clinical description of Lindsay Clancy before her children died was just two words long. Dr. Jennifer Tufts, a physician who treated her for months, testified that Clancy was depressed and flat the day before the killings. She said it under oath at Plymouth Superior Court as a witness that was called by the prosecution. The next day was January 24th of 2023. Clancy allegedly strangled her three children with exercise bands in the basement of the family's home in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Cora, 5, Dawson, 3, Callan, 8 months old. Her lawyers don't dispute that she did it. The trial is about what was happening inside her mind when she did. August 7th was day 9 of testimony. I put that question to the people who were treating her. What did Lindsay Clancy's own doctors actually see in the weeks before January 24th? It's a question that a lot of us have been discussing. You've been discussing. We've all been discussing. Well, Clancy, of course, as you know, if you're just catching up, she faces first-degree murder charges in front of Judge William Sullivan. Her defense is postpartum psychosis. It's a severe illness that can follow childbirth and detach a mother from reality. It's rare, 1 in 1,000. A lot of doctors never even see it in their entire lifetime of practicing. Her lawyers argue she was so sick she couldn't recognize the wrongfulness of what she was doing, which Massachusetts law calls lack of criminal responsibility. It's basically the insanity argument. Both psychiatrists the state called carry a second label besides witness. Yahoo News reported that Lindsay Clancy and her former husband Patrick are suing McLean Hospital and several of her providers in two wrongful death lawsuits. Tufts is one of the defendants. The state built part of its murder case on the same doctors the family says failed her that are suing her civilly. So let that be known. Going into how one may testify in a criminal trial while also facing civil liability in a separate one. You don't necessarily want to admit to something over here in criminal that may end up costing you a little cash on the other side. Either way, though, the testimony from court, it was something to say. Let's break it down for you. The morning's testimony broke apart before the first cross-examination could even start. The trouble began with a whisper the day before. On August 6th, a medical examiner testified about the autopsy of the youngest child, Callan. Callan sobbed through it and was wheeled out of the courtroom for a break. Or Clancy, rather, sobbed through it and was wheeled out of the courtroom for a break as they discussed Callan. As she left, the courtroom's live stream microphone picked up a whisper. There's a whisper on the mic. Somebody was saying something. Well, who's making snide comments into the mic? It's reported all over the place, and various places have different interpretations on what it might mean. At the end of the day, if you really break it down, it's not all that hard to decipher, quite honestly. We'll get to that in a moment. Something that should never have been said on the mic by someone who should not be saying that out loud. Midway through the morning, after the first psychiatrist finished her direct testimony, Sullivan tried to call her back for cross-examination. Defense attorney Kevin Reddington interrupted and refused to take it quietly to the bench. Then he made his accusation in open court. The prosecutors were the voice on that microphone, the voice in the whisper. And the words were, "Shut her up." NBC Boston reported that. And if you just listen to it, you hear it, "Shut her up. Shut up," the woman who's having an emotional moment because the state chose to drag her out in front of the world like a witch and put her on trial. And says, "Oh, this postpartum psychosis, this condition that you have, along with bipolar, we're not going to recognize that as being a thing. We're just going to treat you like you're an evil person that decided one day you were going to kill your family." Basically a witch. We're going to ignore all science. We're going to ignore all medical facts of this case. We're going to ignore your family that has forgiven you, that has also said, "Horrible, but we understand. I forgive you. This was beyond your control." Everybody that cares about her and loves her, that has every right to say, "Burn her at the stake!" More than anybody else, those are the people who are standing by this woman, and the state of Massachusetts, in its infinite wisdom and track record, is in 2026 still treating Lindsay Clancy like a fucking witch. They are. This is just a modern day of it. You're denying just basic medical facts and psychological facts of this case and making false equivalents to other cases that are nothing like this. And there's plenty of parents who try to argue this and are not that. Every once in a while, one of them's that. And this case has all of the evidence to prove it. All of the evidence that she was trying to get the help she needed so damn desperately, her family doing everything they could as well. Did people make some mistakes? Did people go out to take a breather every now and then and maybe shouldn't have because they didn't realize just how damn dangerous the situation was? Yes. I challenge any one of you who've never been in that sort of situation in life to play it perfect. To play any situation perfect that you've never been through that could potentially turn dangerous, and you treat it the way that you may look back on it retrospectively and go, "Well, if I would have done this, maybe this would have worked out better." Yes, we all have those moments in life, and you got to give people grace because they're human. Nobody wanted those kids to die. Nobody thought she was going to go that far, even though she's sitting there telling people, "I'm having these thoughts, I'm having these feelings." And that's a flaw in us as human beings. We are very bad at judging the very dangers that we may be in, especially when another human being is telling it to us, because we always look at ourselves going, well, I couldn't be capable of that. How could this person that I trust be capable of that? Because everybody's brain is different, and sometimes brains go bad. But we don't like to talk about that or mental health or get people educated in that world at all. And then when they go bad, we're all like, I had no idea. I was watching several episodes this week of Evil Lives Here on Investigation Discovery. And there were so many where it's just, we had no idea. And the person's literally telling them ahead of time, like, the shit they're capable of. And every time it's like, oh, I just didn't take it seriously. Maybe we should. If anything has taught me working in this field, working in this lane, is that you should. When people are saying extreme, crazy things out loud, they might mean it. Especially if it's like really dark and not a joke. And potentially dangerous. They might just mean it. People in healthy states of minds don't make weird threats about harming others or themselves for fun. But it's a lot easier to tell ourselves, we're good at that. We're very good at that as humans. And misjudging. There's a lot of that in this case. So anyway, that's, I don't know how I got from there, from Shudder up, but that's where this case is at. You have the prosecution getting upset when the woman they're trying to malign and treat literally as a modern day witch has an emotional outburst because you're parading her in her wheelchair into a courtroom for a crime she's already admitted committing. Because you won't accept the medical facts of it. Shut her up. Maybe someone should shut you up, bitch. Maybe. Maybe. Maybe the Bar Association can have something to do with that. Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Sprague appeared confused and turned to her fellow prosecutor. It's according to Boston.com. All verklempt. I don't know what they're talking about. Spokesperson for the district attorney's office said a review of the video showed someone else entirely whispered, shut it off. A reference to a courtroom monitor displaying autopsy photos, according to the Boston Globe. That's what it was. Shut it off. And maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's a creative explanation. I don't know. You're the one prosecuting a woman as a witch. So I'd say anything's possible at this point. Nice bow, by the way. The jury wasn't in the room for any of it. The Globe noted Sullivan answered with a warning to the whole courtroom. There are microphones all around, he said, and anyone caught making comments would be escorted out with no second chances. Then the testimony resumed. And what happened in that testimony? Dr. Alia Goodhart works at McLean Hospital, a psychiatric hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts. Clancy arrived there by ambulance on New Year's Day in 23 and checked herself involuntarily. Goodhart testified that she stayed nearly 5 days. Goodhart joined her care on January 3rd. Clancy told her she felt numb and worried about depending on an antipsychotic drug to sleep. Goodhart testified. So she tapered that medication down. CBS Boston reported Goodhart considered her a low-risk patient, anxious, but not a danger. The reporting on her diagnosis splits. WBUR reported an initial diagnosis of insomnia with a mental health condition, while CBS Boston reported major depressive disorder severe without psychotic features. Goodhart also testified that Clancy had disagreed with an earlier physician's suggestion of possible bipolar disorder. Goodhart considered that diagnosis herself, but she'd been on the case for a single day and didn't have enough information to make it actually stick. On January 5th, Clancy reported she was sleeping again. She wanted to go home for a long-planned belated birthday party for her daughter, Cora. She booked her own outpatient follow-up, and Goodhart said she was comfortable with the discharge as long as Clancy saw her mental health provider the next day. Asked why she felt safe sending Clancy home, Goodhart described a caring mother who seemed focused on the future. She had support at home and follow-up care already scheduled. McLean sent her home that afternoon with a two-week supply of Ativan and Trazodone, an anti-anxiety drug and sleep aid. She had never stated that she had any thoughts of harming anybody else, Goodhart told the jury. 19 days after that discharge, all three children were dead. Then Reddington took his turn. He asked Goodhart how many women with postpartum psychosis, I need to say that, because there's a difference between postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. Two very different things. How many had she treated in her career? She paused before answering, I haven't seen any. The cross kept digging. According to Yahoo News' account of the testimony, McLean never requested Clancy's earlier mental health records, never tested her blood, and never measured the depth of her postpartum depression during her stay. The hospital treating her 3 weeks before the killings was working from a partial file because they didn't do the work. Dr. Jennifer Tufts came next, and her testimony with Clancy ran deeper. She began treating her in September of 2022, a few months after Callan was born. Clancy was reluctant about medication at first because she was worried about side effects, Tufts testified, though by the time they met, she was considering it and wanted to learn which drugs might help. Tufts also walked through Clancy's history with those drugs. The Boston Globe reported she had taken antidepressants in nursing school and that she went on Zoloft for about a week after her second child was born, mentioning only mild early side effects. The Boston Globe also reported one number from the testimony. Tufts wrote 12 of the 30 prescriptions Clancy received in the 4 months before her children died. That's 30 prescriptions in 4 months, more than we originally thought. The 13, that was just a shorter span. 30 in 4 months from multiple providers. Somewhere inside of that stack of paper, the defense says a sick woman got sicker. The jury also heard from people outside the medical charts. Kimberly Hardy ran the children's playroom at Kingsbury Club in Kingston, where Cora and Dawson stayed. While their parents worked out, Hardy testified the kids were always excited when their mother picked them up. She was always on time, and she never seemed angry with them. Hardy once asked if the family wanted to bring the baby, too, and the Clancys said they were nervous about colds during flu season. Sarah Conia, longtime friend of Patrick Clancy, testified that Lindsay looked thinner and more frail by the fall of 22. The Clancys brought Cora and Dawson to a bonfire with the Carneys on January 22nd of 23, and Clancy seemed quiet but otherwise normal. Her husband Kyle had testified about the same night a day earlier. Carney asked Lindsay at the bonfire how she was doing, and Lindsay answered that she was good. 2 days later, her children were dead. Both sides spent the day working the same witness. Prosecutors underscored that Clancy denied to her clinicians that she wanted to hurt anyone or planned to kill herself. That's the argument the state is building. The illness her defense describes shows up on none of the paperwork from those weeks. Yeah, you know what? It doesn't always show up. That's how this works. Why are we acting surprised? Reddington used the same hours for the opposite case, 30 prescriptions in 4 months, kind of the whole deal. A hospital that never requested her records or tested her blood, and a discharging psychiatrist who had never treated postpartum psychosis. He didn't need a defense witness to put any of that in front of the jury. The prosecution's witnesses carried it in for him. The family civil lawsuits already allege exactly that. The providers failed her, and the suits claim on August 7th, the jury in the criminal case listened to those providers describe their own work. Tufts finished her direct examination late in the afternoon, and Sullivan sent the jurors home for the weekend. She's returning for cross-examination as the trial is resuming, and Reddington has already signaled a target. During Goodhart's cross, he pointed at a Zoloft prescription, Tufts wrote. The stakes for cleanly from here. A first-degree murder conviction in Massachusetts means life in prison without parole. A finding of not guilty by reason of lack of criminal responsibility means commitment to the state mental health facility. Whichever way the jury goes, the trial record now holds a timeline neither side disputes. She asked for help in December, checked herself into a psychiatric hospital on New Year's Day, and left in time for a birthday party. The day before her children died, by her own psychiatrist's testimony, she was depressed and flat. There's a reason every prescription, every chart, and every discharge decision is being read aloud in the Plymouth courtroom. It says a lot about the care that she was giving, or lack thereof, from a woman in distress begging for help. What the jury does with it is going to be very telling. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts if you want to listen to the trial testimony throughout the day as it comes down. We're dropping it for you on our podcast platform. The link is right there for the podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, iHeart, it's all there. It's a link tree. It takes you wherever you get your podcasts. Follow that and you can take our show with you on the go. Listen to us in the car, on your walks, at the gym, wherever you may be, other than just on YouTube. Take us with you there. We do appreciate that. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
In early June of 23, Lindsay Clancy checked herself into McLean Hospital and stayed
5 days.
Dr. Jennifer Tufts had been her psychiatrist since September of 2022. Tufts testified that she learned about that hospital stay only after Clancy was already discharged. Her defense attorney wanted to know, how was that possible? You're her psychiatrist and you don't know about these things? Seriously? Kevin Reddington said. She's visiting with you as a patient and you can't access her medical records. I did not have access to those records because we're a completely separate clinic, Tufts answered. In the 4 months before January 24th of 23, Lindsay Clancy was treated for four different places. Those were Astor Mental Health, a prenatal clinic at South Shore, McLean Hospital, and a program in Rhode Island. None of them could see what the others were doing. I'm going to be honest here with you. Going to be a little tough on Ms. Tufts here today. I do, in fact, feel some empathy for her. Was she qualified to be doing the job that she was entrusted to do? In my opinion, I'm going to say no. But is she out of line? Is she abnormal to the system that functions the way it does right now? Is she one of millions or thousands of doctors now that are in the same position she's in with the same lack of experience? I mean, look, everybody's got to start somewhere. You're going to have a lack of experience at the beginning. Totally get that. I guess what strikes me about her time on the stand, I don't want to call it a performance, but maybe I should, because I do feel like there was some performative elements of it, and not in a way that I think she was even thinking we're going to come across as negative. I don't think this woman is inherently bad or evil or tried to hurt her in any way, shape, or form. I don't. I think she is a product of a system and a society that is really good with mediocre, like really okay with it. This is a product of years and years of saying, just do your best. And for a lot of people, best, their best is the bar's way the fuck down here. Best is up here. Your best may be down here. But when everybody's doing their best and nobody's like, come on, we really got to get up here, the bar of what best actually was and what half of society expects best to be ends up being down here. And they're looking at it going, why do you want so much out of me? Because we used to do better. We used to be better. We used to have higher standards. Not that mental health has ever been in a better state than it is in our country today. As dysfunctional as it is, it's still at a much higher place than it used to be. I'm speaking more in terms of acceptance of paths that make little to no sense, like not being able to access your client's records, medical records for their mental health because it's another clinic, and just being like, well, that's how the system works. Okay. I get it. I get it's how the system works. I know probably one person alone is not going to change it, but acting like, well, that's just what it is and there's nothing we can do about it and there's nothing's ever going to change. That's what gets me, because I don't know, if I'm on the stand and I'm up there and I'm delivering this message of here's what I was dealing with, I don't know that I'd be dealing with it or projecting it in such a way of just like, that's just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is. I'd be like, I know, I wish I had that, but there's nothing by law I would be able to get or to access what in theory we should be able to. This is not me. This is the system. Because I feel like a lot of what Ms. Tufts was indicted on socially on that stand were things that were completely beyond her control in a system that she came up in that is very okay with mediocre results and okay with this hand not knowing what the other's doing. And it's just normal. It's just the ether. It's what you know. And if you don't know any different and nobody's pushing for a higher standard or something better, just doing a little bit better than shit is standing out as being good. Again, that's kind of my soapbox. I want to establish that as we go into this, because a lot of this is not her fault. She is a product of a very broken medical system. And if anything we're learning here, it's not that I think that this that Ms. Tufts needs to be, losing her license or nothing like that. No, if she were in a system that supported her as a physician, as a doctor, in all the ways that it should, and had a different standard as to care, as to what it will accept and won't accept, in terms of its sharing of records and making everything available so a doctor can make the most sound choices for their patient, I think she'd be in a much better place. And I'm sure she could probably thrive there. But she seems to be an operator, a cog in a wheel of a machine that just keeps going, and nobody's saying, we could do a lot better than this. That's my soapbox. Let me step down for a moment. And I'll tell you more about what happened. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube as we go through all of this. Clancy is 35. She obviously admits she took the lives of her three children at their home in Duxbury on January 24th, 23. Cora was 5, Dawson 3, Callan 8 months. Her lawyers argue she was suffering from postpartum psychosis and is not criminally responsible. Prosecutors say she acted intentionally and knew what she was doing. Tufts was hired at Astor Mental Health in August of 22 and got her board certification the following month. She saw Clancy for the first time on September 15th of 22. There were 14 appointments in all, each one running 25 to 30 minutes or so. Reddington asked how many postpartum patients she had treated and asked her before Clancy walks in. And she said, maybe a couple, a couple. She treated around 50 during her 4-year residency at Boston Medical Center. So that's not nothing. Tufts is also a named defendant in a malpractice lawsuit Clancy filed over her own psychiatric care. So there's that. And so that means essentially she has a vested interest in not tearing apart the medical system too much, or herself, or what should have been done or could have been done, because that could equal civil liability over here, to which Her incentive is to not have to face that. That's how this works. Everybody's are inspired by their own things. Everybody has their own reasons to say what they're going to say and do what they're going to do and believe what they're going to believe. Reddington asked whether her online biography, which listed postpartum psychiatry among her interests, amounted to negligence. I do not believe that I've been negligent, she said. First, she said, was that one of your expertise? Is that you're claiming you're an expert on your website? And she said, I don't believe it's that. I think it's more of an interest. But it was kind of just out in the air. The courtroom was packed. More people lined up for that cross-examination than any day of this trial since Patrick Clancy testified during the first week. Our own Bob Mata was there. And we'll be talking with him a little bit later in the week to get his take of what it was like in that courtroom. In Massachusetts, psychiatric records do not travel the way the rest of a medical chart does. A doctor has to request them specifically, and the patient has to sign a release before they can hand it over. Clancy could have signed one. Tufts testified she never asked her to. See, that's a big thing. People are going to jump on that. They're going to, well, see, she could have signed something to have it handed over. Yes, but it would be nice to have the doctor's offer for you to do that first. Why would you necessarily supposed to have the knowledge that I need to sign this to hand this over? Well, she was a labor and delivery nurse, so she should know that that's not something that the labor and delivery nurses do. And if you're in a state of mental chaos, she's not the one that should be telling the doctors how to do their job. When I'm hungry and I go into a restaurant, I don't want to have to go back into the kitchen and tell the chef how to prepare the meal. That's their job. When you go and get your oil changed, do you want to have to go and explain to them how to change the oil on your vehicle? When you go into a store and you can't find an item and you're looking around, do you want to have the clerk or have to explain to the clerk how to look up where to find that item? That one happens all the time. You go into a store. I could easily Google it myself on the app of the store and find out what aisle. I just should do that. I should just stop asking people questions. But that's what always gets me, where it's like, you work here. You're here every day. People used to be like, oh, yeah, aisle 5. Now it's like, let me look here. And mediocre. It's a prime example of how our society in general operates on such a mediocre level and is just a-okay with it. It's not just in the aisles of the Home Depot. It's not just in places in the past where it's like, well, I'll give them a little leeway. You know, it's an entry level. It's now in high college educated degree doctoral systems, where the bar used to be way over here. Now it's like, can you go along with the shit we're pushing? Okay, if you can, you're going to fit in lovely. Can you go along with a system that really does, one hand doesn't talk to the other, and really feel confident that you're giving your patients adequate medical care and really believe it? If you can go to sleep at night knowing that there's this many holes in the system and this many ways to fail a client, a patient that go beyond your control, I don't know. I mean, that I'd be screaming for reform. And, you know, that's not for everybody to do, I guess, but holy shit. This, if anything, like I said, this case is an indictment on the medical system and how poorly laid out it is and how poorly one hand talks to the other. And how, again, seemingly okay, the doctors are with this setup. Tufts is also, like I said, that named defendant in that malpractice suit. Reddington asked whether her online biography, which listed postpartum psychiatric among her interests, amounted to negligence. I do not believe that I've been negligent, she said. The courtroom was packed. More people line up for that cross-examination than for any day of this trial since Patrick Clancy testified during the first week. In Massachusetts, psychiatric records do not travel the way the rest of the medical chart does. A doctor has to request them specifically, and the patient has to sign a release before any are handed over. Clancy would have or could have signed one. Like I said, Tufts testified she never asked her to. Her reason was that she did not need it. Clancy could recite her own treatment from memory, the drug names, the doses, the date she started and stopped each one. She provided incredibly detailed information, Tufts said. It showed me she was capable. You do understand that people can sometimes be inaccurate with that information, lie about that information, make mistakes. That's why we keep an actual record and we don't just rely on the patients to just recite that shit off. Call me crazy. So you're saying, like, if she walked in and said she wanted a shitload of opiates because that's what she's been on and her previous providers have been prescribing them, she knows how to use them, and she just takes them like Tic Tacs, you'd be like, well, she knows her shit. She knows her shit. Let me write you. How many you like? I don't know. That's pure conjecture. But it's a weird way of answering the question. Reddington asked why she never called Clancy's parents. Tufts said that is not standard practice with an adult who can speak for herself. I'll give her that. He asked whether she's a mandated reporter, meaning someone the law requires to report a child who may be getting hurt. And she said yes, but that a patient having thoughts of self-harm is not by itself something she has to report. I'll give her that too. Again, these are ways the system is failing. These are things that should be fixed. Tufts testified she considered a treatment called Zulresso. It's approved for postpartum depression, and it's delivered by an IV in a hospital over roughly 60 hours. She could not prescribe it from an outpatient office, so she told Clancy to raise it with a clinic in Rhode Island. Reddington put a 2021 medical article in front of her linking thyroid function to postpartum psychosis. Tufts had not read it. She testified there was no clinical reason to test Clancy's thyroid. Asked about her own publication, she said that she has written something brief and is a clinician, not a researcher. She asked about blood testing that shows how a patient's body breaks down psychiatric medication. Tufts said that testing is very new and she did not order it. It would not have made a difference in her treatment, she said. I'm not a doctor, but I might beg to differ with that. It does tell you how your body metabolizes certain drugs. And since we're doing the let's throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks approach, I'm going to say the test that shows what metabolizes how and well and all of that might have made an impact. Maybe. I don't know. I'm saying the potential is there. It would not have made a difference answer. Again, this is scary when the podcaster without the medical license or degree or education can look at some of the exact same facts that are being told as absolutes by the medical professional and say, no, that's bullshit. You're supposed to be the one that knows these things and understands these things and can talk to these things. Not the guy sitting in his studio basement talking about true crime all day. She testified that she repeatedly recommended Clancy get into individual therapy every week. Good suggestion. Between September 22 and January 23, Lindsay Clancy was issued more than 30 prescriptions across 13 different medications. Tufts wrote 12 of them. On December 8th, 2022, Clancy told Tufts she had gone in an emergency room because she was having thoughts of ending her life. She was assessed and then sent home. Oh, you feeling better, honey? All right, bye-bye. Tufts testified that Clancy did not require hospitalization at their appointment either. Well, apparently she doesn't require it when she's saying she needs it, so I'm not going to put it past anybody to miss that red flag. Around the middle of that same month, Clancy told her husband she was having thoughts of harming the children. Tufts testified she did not know that. It asked what she would have done with that information. She said she would have been very concerned and might have called the state child protection agency. The disclosure existed. It never reached the doctor writing the prescriptions, and that's important. The doctors are going to be only as good as the information they are getting, without a doubt. Clancy's next appointment with the Tufts was on January 6th of 23, the day after McLean released her. She wasn't doing well, Tufts said. McLean had diagnosed major depression and taken her off the antipsychotic another provider had started her on. None of that was a violation. The records rule is state law. The privacy rule is federal law. That's great. Now, Resso is licensed for use inside a hospital. The blood testing is newer than most of the drugs it measures. Somewhere in the middle of a cross-examination that ran for hours, Reddington stopped pressing. You're a doctor and you're trying to do the right thing, he told her. This is just horrible. He also told her that Clancy was not doctor shopping. She was asking for help, he said, and she was afraid of the pills. Then prosecutor Jennifer Sprague stood up for redirect and built the opposite case out of the same facts, because of course she did. Clancy booked her own appointment. She took herself to an emergency room when she needed to. She described her medications and her reactions to them in precise detail, and Sprague walked Tufts through every bit of it. Sprague asked whether Tufts had ever seen a sign of psychosis in Lindsay Clancy. No, Tufts said. Tufts also told the jury she saw no sign of mania. She described what she would have been looking for, including fast and loud speech, hyperactivity, and racing thoughts. It was the opposite, she said. On the family question, the state handed Tufts the answer the law had already given her. Federal privacy rules bar the provider from contacting relatives without a patient's permission, and Clancy never gave it. Never asked to do it either. On January 16th of 23, Clancy reported she had to force herself out of bed. Tufts testified she had no idea that Clancy had taken her children to the Museum of Science. And the days before that, Sprague also had her tell the jury that remote appointments are common and accepted practice. That right there, I think, is the biggest problem in all of this case. Common and accepted practice. We have too many things in this, in mental health, that are not serving the client, that are just common and accepted practice, and that's what the providers operate by. And the problem is some of these common and accepted practices are not helpful, are not in the patient's best interest. They're done out of convenience. They're done out of requirement at one point in time. A lot of it started with COVID, with the virtual appointments, and never came out of it as far as this is acceptable, this is not acceptable. It was done out of desperation in many cases because there was no choice. And I think it is great that there's virtual as an option. But there are certain cases and certain times, especially when you're dealing with someone in mental health crisis, where an in-person appointment is needed, is required. And common and accepted? Is it fitting the bill for this specific person? Or are we just, is everything just common and accepted? Is everybody just treated by the same cloth? It's all just the same. Everybody's the same. Everybody requires the same sort of treatment, the common and accepted practice of treatment. Nobody requires extra attention or less attention or adequate. It's just common and accepted. And this is how we're doing it. That's the problem. The defense says all of that proves nobody was watching closely enough. The state says it proves there was nothing to catch. At 2:59 in the afternoon, the state called its 61st witness, Julie Paul. Paul is a psychiatric nurse practitioner and a certified nurse midwife. In 2018, she built a prenatal behavioral health program at South Shore Health, a clinic set up for pregnant and postpartum women dealing with mood disorders. That program is the one Lindsay Clancy needed. She did not reach through referral. Her mother-in-law at the time, Susan Clancy, was a labor and delivery nurse at South Shore who knew Paul. And she made the phone call. Paul screened Clancy over the phone on November 20th, 2022. Clancy denied thoughts of ending her life, denied hallucinations, and denied delusions. Paul asked her directly whether she wanted to harm herself or her children, and Clancy said no. Paul testified the same screening showed extreme anxiety. Clancy scored a 23 on the Enderberg scale, a questionnaire for new mothers, where anything over 13 is a flag. The top of that scale is 30. She scored 23. Her stated concern was that she could not sleep. One of the biggest concerns for people in this sort of mental state. Tufts testified she was never aware that test had been given or that it came back showing severe depression. Again, the intake appointment happened the next day and Paul started her on Prozac. 4 days later, she took Clancy off the Prozac and wrote three new prescriptions, including a single dose of Ambien plus Remeron and Klonopin. She warned Clancy not to take the Klonopin alongside the Ativan that Tufts was already prescribing. Asked whether she had concerns about stopping the Prozac after 3 days, Paul told the jury that a patient who has no confidence in a medication does not do well on it. On November 28th, Clancy reported a panic attack. Paul recommended a partial hospitalization program, which means a patient spends most of the day at a hospital and sleeps at home. She pointed Clancy towards the program at women and infants in Rhode Island. Clancy said the logistics would not work for her family. Weeks earlier, Tufts had recommended a partial hospitalization program in Brookline. Neither clinician knew the other had made the same call. Clancy went to women and infant for 1 day. On November 30th, Paul transferred Clancy's care to another nurse practitioner at the clinic named Rebecca Joletta. That's the nurse practitioner named Rebecca Joletta. Paul testified she was already in the process of leaving the job for a move out of state. She was gone from the clinic by the middle of December. Lindsay Clancy was Julie Paul's patient for just 10 days. Tufts saw Clancy for the last time on January 23rd of 23. It was a video call, the same as the other 13, and it ran under half an hour. Clancy said her heart was racing, and she denied any thoughts of harming herself or anyone else. A week before that, Tufts noted records, on the record, show Clancy saying that bonding with her infant son feels forced. The notes also show that she did not increase the dose of her antidepressant the way she had been told to. Reddington went at her one more time. Clancy had told her she felt numb for 17 days, he said, and she never reached out to the family. He said that pushed Lindsay Clancy over the edge. I don't think so, Tufts said. Tufts recommended weekly therapy for 4 months. Clancy saw a therapist at Alistair Mental Health twice. Paul was asked when Clancy's follow-up appointment with Rebecca Joletta was supposed to be, and she could not recall. The jury, if they convict on first-degree murder, Lindsay Clancy spends the rest of her life in prison with no chance of parole. If they find she was not criminally responsible, she goes to a state psychiatric hospital. Judge William Sullivan ruled that morning that the defense can add three doctors to its witness list in the middle of the trial. Dr. Elizabeth Lapasada will describe the injuries Clancy suffered going out a second-story window. She'll also tell the jury there were no injuries to the children before that day. Dr. Michael Volfich will testify about her spine. A third doctor, Donald Condi, was approved without a summary of what he will cover. Sullivan wrote that he found no bad faith in the late addition, and that the testimony is material to the issues in the case. He plans to hear it himself before deciding how much the jury gets to hear. Julie Paul's cross-examination comes next. By the time Lindsay Clancy checked into McLean Hospital, Julie Paul had been gone from the clinic for a month, and Jennifer Tufts would not hear about the admission until it was over. Paul's last answer of the day was about the last conversation she had with Clancy. She told her that she was leaving the program. Clancy thanked her. That was the end of November of 22, 8 weeks before January 24th. There's a lot to unpack in this trial. A lot. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I think I've given my soapbox on this. I'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. Like I said, we're going to talk with Bob Mata this week on the show, so press subscribe. He's in the courtroom. And by his judgment and text I'm seeing right now, I think this thing might be to a jury a lot sooner than anybody thinks. Again, your thoughts in the comment section. We'll pick it up there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play. Only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways, exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.